So when you're faced with a tragedy, with loss, and you can't make sense of it, my only response is to make something.
Colleagues honor the life of late Professor Zizhi Yan with a new memorial on campus. Welcome to Carolina Connection. I'm Raina Drake.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. Also this week, computer science students worry about AI impacting their future. A local puppeteer group is back on stage after Tropical Storm Chantal destroyed much of their warehouse. Immature and professional poets have a new place to workshop, and the hiring of Bill Belichick changes the football game day experience, for better or worse.
I'm an old dog, so yeah, I miss the old ways. Change is hard, but we have to adjust to change. It is semi-pro now, whether we like it or not, so we better maximize what it is and do our best.
From the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media, this is Carolina Connection.
Thank you for joining us. A new memorial on campus celebrates the life of Professor Zizhi Yan. It encourages students, faculty, and the community to sit and reflect. The memorial was dedicated August 28th, 2 years to the day after Professor Yan was shot and killed in his office in Caudill Laboratories. Niana Rieshi spoke with the memorial's creators.
As we're talking to each other, students, staff, faculty members, going by, looking at the memorial site and really kind of absorbing the memory of Zizhi, and this is what we wanted to create.
Ronit Freeman is an associate professor of applied physical sciences at UNC and worked in the office across from Professor Yan, who she had the pleasure of getting to know.
We became friends, we saw each other almost every day. He had two young, beautiful girls who used to come to office and visit us. He was quiet, smiling, really a great colleague, and just a beautiful person to be around.
Next to the memorial bench and blooming garden just outside Professor Yan's office in Caudill Laboratories sits a plaque that Professor Freeman helped to design.
We have an image of nanoparticles inspired by one of Zizhi's publications, where he used light to arrange those nanoparticles in some sort of a pattern and a shape to investigate how they form a community of particles.
The plaque, with inscriptions in English and his native language of Mandarin, pays homage to both Professor Yan's family and his research in light. It pairs beautifully with the light that shines through the swaying trees and softly onto the memorial.
When you sit down at it, the bench, it is made from oak and it smells like oak. And this particular tree, this 250-year-old tree, when you smell its scent, you are smelling the Carolina blue sky from 250 years ago.
Richard Superfine is a professor of applied physical sciences and was the chair of the department when Professor Yan was recruited to UNC. Using his at-home wood shop, he decided to craft the bench that sits in the center of the memorial.
So when you're faced with a tragedy, with loss, and you can't make sense of it, my only response is to make something. To have a group of people that knew Zizhi, that were remembering him as we moved through the fabrication of the bench, makes it all the more meaningful.
One of the many people who helped with this project was Susan Cohen, the Associate Director of the Institute for the Environment and a member of the Carolina Tree Heritage Program, which gives life back to fallen trees from Chapel Hill's campus.
And it started with the felling of a 250-year-old post oak. And that's the wood we're sitting on now on this bench. It's the oldest tree that we know about on campus. And we take those trees and we turn them into something else. Furniture, art, all different kinds of things that have this new legacy now.
Sitting at the bench, the conversation kept coming back to this idea of legacy. The garden, designed by university landscape architect Daniel Wittes, includes Chinese mahogany and edgeworthia, both plants native to Professor Yan's homeland. The oak sourced from a tree that stood near New West is a reminder of the significance he continues to hold in the Chapel Hill community.
I love that people think of this resource. UNC folks love their campus and they love their university. I've never seen anything quite like it. So to have the memorial of this tragic event, have a real piece of Carolina as a part of it, is pretty extraordinary.
And so all those things combine to give you an object which transcends its physical being. And suddenly it's filled with wonder, it's filled with heartbreak, it's filled with meaning and excitement. And in our particular case, it's filled with remembrance.
In Chapel Hill, I'm Liana Rieschi.
Many students, and even a lot of professors, are using AI to lighten their workload. But there's growing concern about its long-term effects. Some experts forecast that AI will take a large number of entry-level positions away from new graduates. Others worry that students will become too dependent on it. Marguerite Stuss took to UNC's campus to ask computer science students their thoughts.
Here in Citizen Hall, a hub for computer science majors, there's machinery and technology all around. Undergraduates and master's students walk side by side. There's a social buzz alongside the technological one.
The reason I decided to do computer science was coming into college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I had taken one introductory programming course in Python when I was in high school. So when I sat down to pick my major, I thought about what homework do I like to do?
That's Lizzie Coates, a junior comp sci major. She has been a teaching assistant for Comp 110 for the past three semesters, a class focused on introducing basic programming skills to first and second year students.
And I found a really wonderful community of like-minded people there. I think that's probably been the biggest influence on my experience of the program.
But Coates has noticed something over the past three semesters working as a TA, what she calls a crazy reliance on ChatGPT.
Students that'll just run the prompt into AI and then submit it directly to the autograder without looking to see if the concepts that we've covered are even being applied at all. I think that a lot of kids are going to get through their degrees by just pretty much completely cheating their way through and then be basically stranded when they make it out into the world.
Anisha Musti, a junior economics and computer science major, explores the same problem from a student's perspective.
I definitely think AI is affecting my learning. I think it's really difficult for me to sit there and go back and forth, and debugging and figuring out code is not supposed to be a simple thing to learn. You are supposed to keep trying until it works, and that is a commitment. But now the temptation to turn to ChatGPT and solve your two-hour problem in 2 minutes, especially as a student where you have 100 other things weighing down on you, is just too great.
As Coates and Musti and other students hunt for jobs, AI is causing uncertainty. Companies such as Amazon and Microsoft are cutting entry-level positions and instead using AI for simple coding tasks, the New York Times reports. Graduate student Dirain Gangasetti says AI has pros and cons.
Yeah, it's really difficult for entry-level grads to find new roles in the job market now because of the takeover of AI. Actually, I would consider AI as a good tool for students, but now students have become smarter and people are actually getting hired who use AI in a smart way. So it's how you use these AI tools and in a smarter way. That's what I would say.
Coates and Musti agree. AI is as harmful to a student's education and postgraduate life as they want it to be. It comes down to morals and how much time students have on their hands.
AI is a tool, so you can either use it to think for you or think with you.
For me, if I was going into the technical side of this, I can't just sit back and be I'm going to cheat because that's how it is. It's actually just as much in my power to fix that. And I think that's something really important to keep in mind for people who are studying this major is you also are shaping that.
The short term affects the long term. AI is growing more common in the classroom and in entry level positions. Computer science majors are not the only students affected by AI as their recruiting process begins. Teachers, students, and employers will have to weigh the morality of AI usage in the job market and classroom alike. In Chapel Hill, I'm Marguerite Stuss.
Another memorial on campus commemorated the lives lost 24 years ago on September 11th, 2001. Community members gathered at 6 a.m. to climb the 2,071 stairs in Keenan Stadium. Andrew Sellers reports.
To the 12th annual 9/11 memorial stair climb. My name is Cadet Art, and I am the cadet.
Delaney Art is a senior at UNC Chapel Hill. She's the cadet battalion commander at UNC's Army ROTC, which made her the planner of the 9/11 memorial stair climb.
So a lot of planning goes into this event. We started planning back in July. So as the Cadet Battalion Commander, I'm put in charge of it because it requires the whole team to come together. I've been putting about 10 to 15 hours a week on top of my schoolwork towards this event. I think that the show out this morning was really impressive with almost 1,600 people, and 100% worth it. I would do it 100 times over.
All kinds of people climbed the 2,071 stairs to commemorate the tragedy that happened 24 years ago. Students from all backgrounds, firefighters fully geared up, UNC cadets carrying bloated rucks.
We stand on the shoulders of giants, as I said in my speech, and it's really important for us to never forget the sacrifices that were made that got us to this place that we're in today, and to continue to remember those who gave their lives to protect us. It's really important for us to continue to memorialize these events and think about why they're so important, because that contributes to our shared identity as Americans.
Arndt says that she was amazed by the firefighter's grit.
The full firefighter suit, they said it was weighing close to like 80 pounds and no heat at all was escaping through that thing. So I was really just amazed by them and how they continue to memorialize this event even so far after the events of 9/11.
Dozens of firefighters climbed the stairs on Thursday morning. Some carried tools, like axes and crowbars. Others carried flags. They were all sweating. Here's Sam Harder, a firefighter at Carrboro Fire Rescue Department. He said he appreciates the position firefighters hold in the community.
And being the person that people call to go fix the problem that they don't think they can fix, and it's really nice to be certified and knowledgeable to help people in their worst moments.
He commemorates 9/11 because of the sacrifices the firefighters made.
It's a moment in time where I think it's 343 people, firefighters at least, decided to go to a certain death to help maybe one person.
That's something Carrboro Fire Chief Will Potter remembered as he climbed.
We climbed 110 floors today, over 2,000 steps. Yeah, but we knew what it was for. We knew we had a group behind us supporting us. That day, they were rushing up the stairs as others were rushing down, trying to get as many people out as possible. And in my head, I have to know, like, it really gives me chills to think that they most likely knew that they weren't coming out of that building. And they didn't care. They did it anyway.
Potter says the stair climb strengthens the bond between the fire department and the broader community.
I think seeing all of the members from Carolina, seeing other members of the community, seeing their ROTC cadets out there really showed how much support there still is today.
Arndt says that looking forward, she will continue to commemorate 9/11.
Besides taking the moment of silence with everyone else, I think I'm definitely going to find some stairs and I'm going to continue to climb them. So continuing to do that in the future and continuing to reflect on those who gave their lives, because without it, like, we don't have any identity as a nation.
She says that's what makes her proud to join the Army, and that's what makes America special. In Chapel Hill, I'm Andrew Sellers.
Six-time Super Bowl champion Bill Belichick has begun his season as UNC's new head football coach, and the effects are being felt beyond Keenan Stadium. University leaders hope to make UNC something it's never been in its 235-year history, a football powerhouse. And they hope fans will feel the difference on game days like today. Gracie Durham reports on the changing field of college football.
When UNC announced the hiring of former NFL coach Bill Belichick, excitement spread fast among alumni like Jason Cause, who never thought he'd see this happen.
I was shocked. I didn't think it was possible. So I was relieved, happy, excited.
For many Tar Heel fans, the move marks a turning point for the football program, and Cause says it's already having an effect on fan energy.
Things were starting to wane under Mac, so now we've got a new life and lots of enthusiasm, I think, throughout all of Tar Heel Nation.
The anticipation surrounding Belichick coaching at UNC is partly because it's never been seen before. UNC professor Tim Cruthers says it's an unprecedented change.
It's very unusual. I think it's unprecedented. There's never been anything quite like a six-time Super Bowl NFL coach returning to a college program or coming to a college program.
Cruthers, a UNC alum and former Sports Illustrated writer, knows Carolina football has never had a reputation like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine a situation where UNC is ever thought of as a football school, but maybe that's just me having been around in and around the athletics world here for gosh, going on 40 years, I think the goal is at least to make our football team relevant. We just haven't been, you know, we just haven't had enough success over the years to really become relevant.
UNC's athletic department is capitalizing on that newfound relevance, transforming the center of campus into a tailgate space. Rick Steinbacher, Senior Associate Athletic Director at UNC, says this new initiative was designed to appeal to students and the broader community.
Yeah, we just wanted to create a fun, festive, vibrant place that could appeal to students, could appeal to alums, you know, fans of all ages.
It's called the Chapel Thrill Game Day Experience, and it's no coincidence that it launched just as Belichick arrived.
You know, hiring Coach Belichick, it created such a buzz amongst our fans, our students, our donors, our alums. And we really wanted to take advantage of that. And again, just create something new and different on our campus.
But Steinbacher says there's more to upcoming changes than just school spirit.
And we are having to do some new and different things, whether it's related to sponsorship or naming of things. And that's not unique to us. That's college sports now. Because we are sharing revenue directly with student athletes, which is a great thing for those student athletes, it's a significant increase in our expenses.
One of those new and different things is Chapel Thrill. The new setup includes food, drinks, and live music. Steinbacher says the athletic department is collaborating with other departments across the university to minimize disruption to campus operations and the community.
We're doing this in a way that is additive to the entire campus community and not in any way a nuisance or a problem.
These changes aren't just happening on UNC's campus. Steinbacher says other universities inspired them.
Places like Notre Dame, you know, Clemson, Texas, they've just had a lot of success of really kind of leaning in as a campus community and making football game days so much more than the game.
But with all the changes UNC is making, even lifetime fans like Cause have mixed feelings.
I'm an old dog, so yeah, I miss the old ways. Change is hard, but we have to adjust to change. It is semi-pro now, whether we like it or not. So we better maximize what it is and do our best.
Students and alumni are feeling the changes both on the field and across campus. As part of Chapel Thrill, today's pregame festivities feature a concert by country artist John Stone ahead of the Richmond game. In Chapel Hill, I'm Gracie Durham.
Listening to Carolina Connection, the weekly student newscast from UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. I'm Raina Drake.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. The Paper Hand Puppet Project has been bringing giant puppets and community performances to North Carolina for 25 years. But this summer, flooding from Tropical Storm Chantal damaged some of their puppets and their warehouse. But as Brooks Stevenson reports, the show must go on.
Rehearsing in the Forest Theater, dozens of performers from the Paper Hand Puppet Project get ready for their show later in the day. One of the cast members, Barb Ford, shows some of the pieces of puppetry essential to the production.
This is something that I actually wear. This is a water drop.
Many in the cast describe Ford as a serial multitasker. This description is evident as she is assistant stage manager as well as other roles, with one even including stilts. For Ford, being involved with the production reminds her why she loves it.
I love the community and like the camaraderie of doing the shows and putting everything together. It's a very collaborative experience.
The production is called The Gift, and it centers on water and the power it holds. While based in Saxapahaw, the Paper Hand Puppet Project holds their annual production every year in the Forest Theater. However, this summer brought their season off to a difficult start. In July, Saxapahaw was flooded by the Tropical Storm Chantal. The Paper Hand Puppet Project's base warehouse was heavily damaged, and many of their puppets had to be discarded. The water damage brought on by the flooding led to the loss of many of their valued papier-mâché puppets. Ford says that seeing the damage was difficult for many in the cast and crew.
I think seeing a lot of the puppets that we, you know, were from the early days and having to get rid of them, maybe before people were ready to say bye to them. It was, that was hard.
According to their website, the Paper Hand Puppet Project underwent more than $100,000 in losses from the tropical storm.
Things are pretty trashed in here. There's just like a layer of kind of mud on the floor.
Near the Haw River in Saxapahaw, Donovan Zimmerman describes the damage to their old warehouse. Zimmerman is the co-founder of the Paper Hand Puppet Project, along with Jan Berger. Zimmerman says that this storm further proved what environmentalist groups like his have been saying.
I mean, it just makes it more prescient and more, it sort of underscores it and puts big exclamation points on what we've been saying all along about the climate crisis and needing to change our way of being here.
The National Low Income Housing Coalition estimates the damages to North and South Carolina from the tropical storm Chantal are between $4 to $6 billion. The Paper Hand Puppet Project has been performing for 25 years, and Zimmerman says he intends for the group to perform for longer.
For me, I would love to just see it keep going, and then as I get older, I more and more realize I'd love to see it be able to survive beyond my own lifetime, if possible.
Despite the setbacks, the Paper Hand Puppet Project was able to resume their annual performance only a week later than usual. Ford says the most encouraging thing to see from this disaster was how willing the cast and crew were able to help each other bounce back.
Our apprentices and our studio artists were just, they were just amazing. Like, they jumped on it, and they, things that got damaged that we needed for this show were the priority, and they got stuff fixed within a couple of weeks.
As of this week, the Paper Hand Puppet Project has raised more than $99,000 for the damages caused by the tropical storm Chantal. They will be finishing their performance of The Gift at the end of this month, as they set their eyes on performing in Asheville in November. In Chapel Hill, I'm Brooke Stevenson.
Finally this week, just inside Epilogue on Franklin Street, coffee brews and local poets flourish. Chapel Hill Poet Laureate Donovan Livingston is hosting poetry workshops around a central theme. What does it mean to be unfinished in a community of writers? Anthony Guerra Flores reports.
Among Epilogue's espresso machine burrs, the first of four poetry workshops hosted by Chapel Hill Poet Laureate Donovan Livingston began with the goal of bringing writers together.
But the whole point of this experience is to bring our unfinished works together. For me, I think there's something beautiful about being undone or incomplete or in the process of completion. And I think bringing unfinished works helps reduce some of that intimidation folks might feel when they approach poetry or performance or even just sharing something out loud.
Groups of local North Carolinian poets, ranging from award-winning authors to community organizers, sat scattered at different tables, ready to come together and share their work.
It's really a piece, it's kind of like an essay piece, kind of. But like, it also wasn't, it kind of was inspired by from Working the Roots, but I kind of threw that.
Working the Roots?
Oh, Working the Roots, chapter. That's her book.
Oh!
She was telling me about the book, yeah, and I was writing it down, but that was the first thought that
I'm in
the
right spot.
but that's when I...
At one of the tables, a group of writers spoke about what inspires them. Here's award-winning author A.W. Jackson.
Shoot, I'll say life experiences for sure. There was a time where I had writer's block for like a year or some change. So it was like I was just, you know, not experiencing life. So I'll say that definitely helps me.
While others shared powerful pieces, here's Amanda Bennett, author of debut chapbook Working the Roots.
Forget the future before it happens, before the fire consumes what you thought you wanted for yourself. Brace that dream with yellow lips in the arms of the gray sentinel that kept you as you kept alive the ghost, the other, the settling, the shrinking. Don't look at the guards without faces expecting to see yourself. Give up what you want to receive what you need.
That's
wow. All of this to say, Donovan Livingston's first poetry workshop allowed voices to flourish without shame.
I was excited to put together this opportunity for folks across the town to engage with one another poetically putting together, unfinished drafts of works that they've been, you know, sort of sifting through. And I think it was a beautiful experience to, you know, invite people into this space where they can be vulnerable with one another, to lay bare pieces of creative writing that weren't completely done, but wanted some solid feedback.
And Donovan wishes to continue these poetry workshops because of their importance.
The more we can do that, I think the better off we all will be, because there is community that comes from us being open to that vulnerability over and over again.
We know for certain, however, that a familiar face will be showing up again to the next workshop.
Most definitely I'll be coming again. And the reason is, I feel like he made it a great space. Location is great. The energy there is great. The people that he invited out that attended were great, and everyone like was involved.
And this community has much to look forward to. There are three more workshops that Donovan plans on hosting, and many more conversations to be held.
All right, peace and love, y'all. It's your boy, Dr. Donovan Livingston, poet laureate, town in Chapel Hill, professor, and all that. All those good things, man, wherever you at, whatever you're doing, do it with a full heart and full mind. Peace and love, y'all.
In Chapel Hill, I'm Anthony Guerra Flores.
So, Raina, do you like poetry?
I do. I used to write poetry, so this workshop is definitely something that I would be interested in attending.
Yeah, I agree. It looks really cool. On that note, thank you for listening to the first edition of Carolina Connection this semester. We are a production of the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. We hope you enjoyed your time with us. Our technical director is Kevin Paris. I'm Maddie Policastro.
And I'm Raina Drake. There's more to be discovered at carolinaconnection.org. You can also find our stories on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now back to the weekend programming on 97.9 The Hill.